Blog Talk Radio.
I got a feeling that tonight's gonna be a good night. That tonight's gonna be a good night. That tonight's gonna be a good, good night. I feel it. That tonight's gonna be a good night. That tonight's gonna be a good night. That tonight's gonna be a good, good night. Tonight's the night. Let's live it up. I got my money. Let's spin it up. Go out and smash it. Like, oh my God.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the premiere episode of Today's Woman. I am Willow Cross, and I am here today with my co-hosts, Ashley Fontaine, Carol Coons, Susan Burdorf, Kelly Abell, and Stacey Rourke is supposed to be with us today, but she is out with the flu, so she will have to wait till next month to catch us. We are premiering on the World of Ink Network. The World of Ink Network has many different shows, so please check them out, and I'm sure you'll find something that you like. We've got a little something for everything. Hello, everybody.
Hello.
I'm so excited about this. I think this is going to be a fantastic show. Let's talk. I would like everybody to get to introduce themselves. And what they're currently working on. Ashley, why don't you go next? Because I'm dying to hear about all this stuff, girl. Tell everybody about yourself.
Well, hello, everybody. First of all, I'd like to say thank you to World of Ink Network and all of you great authors for allowing me to be a part of this, because this is exciting. You know, it's the first show I've ever been on or done that is not pertaining to books, so I'm excited about what we're going to be able to offer. So thank you for having me. I'm Ashley Fontaine. I'm a writer. I live in Malvern, Arkansas, and I've published 8 books, 3 of which have been optioned for movies and one that's actually in production at the moment. I am currently working on a 3-book series penned in conjunction with my mother, Lillian Hansen. The first book, Blood Ties, will be out hopefully by June of this year. So you can find out more about me by visiting my website, which is ashleyfontaine.com. You can see the trailer for the movie Foreseen, which is based off my book, The Lie, at foreseenmovie.com. And I also host a show on Friday nights on Blog Talk Radio called The Right Stuff, where I interview other authors. So that's about it for me.
That's a lot. That's a whole lot. Okay, Carol, would you like to introduce yourself and tell everybody?
I don't know how I follow that one. I swear, this is crazy. Anyway, I want to thank everybody at World of Ink for having us on here. I'm just so excited. I am Carol Coons. I also write with my son under C.A. Coons. We write young adult and middle grade literature. And I also write under Amanda Jason, which is my new adult. I have 2 books in the works right now, and my son and I are continuing our series that we started 5 years ago. He made my bucket list by saying, Mom, we're going to write a book together. And so far we've written, 3 books together. We're writing our 4th right now. And then I am writing, like I said, 2 by myself. So I didn't think I'd ever be this busy at this age, but this is crazy. And but anyway, stalk me on Facebook under Carol Coons or Amanda Jason, like my page. I do have a .com, but it has spiders and cobwebs in it because, I never go in there. I'm terrible. I usually on Facebook or Twitter me. Yes, I'm on Twitter, too. I do both, the C.A. Coons one, and I do Amanda Jason. So follow me anywhere. I love to be stalked. I never get stalked, I don't think. Oh, well, I must be that boring. anyway, that's me in a nutshell, and who's next?
Okay, how about Kelly? Would you like to go next?
Sure, I'd be happy to. I am very excited to be a part of this show, and, you know, I consider myself a modern woman, and I'm quite busy. I have 10 novels published already, and I'm working on the third book in my Saving Shenanigans series, which is a contemporary romance series. And Mara's Passion will be out for pre-order on March 1st, so I'm very happy about that. I also have a graphic arts company, and I work primarily with authors and publishers doing whatever you need done, covers, banners, trailers, anything you need from a marketing promotion standpoint, my company can do it. So I stay busy with both of those things, but writing is really my passion, and I really enjoy that. So I'm excited about this third book coming out to round out this trilogy. And I think the next thing I'll try to do is book number two in the Haunted Destiny series, which is a young adult horror series. So I'm looking forward to diving back into that again.
Oh, that sounds good. That sounds good. Susan?
I hope it was.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead, Kelly. We cut you off.
No, I'm done. Go ahead. No, I'm done.
Okay. Susan?
Okay. My turn? Can you hear
it's
me?
It's your turn.
We're ready
for you.
You can hear me. I have a tendency to forget to take the mute off. Here I am lecturing Carol on how to use the system and do the phones and all that stuff, and then I go and forget the mute all the time. So if you don't hear me, I'm probably here. I'm just a ghost. I'm just on mute. So anyway, I am not as prolific as these other wonderful ladies here as far as my writing goes. I do a lot of writing. I don't do a lot of publishing. I like to do short stories, and now this year I've got 4 novels that will be coming out at different points during the year, so I'm really excited about that. I'm finally going to do it. Thank you. Thank you for everyone for the encouragement. I've published many, many short stories, but I've just never taken the plunge into the big pool. So now I'm going to do that. And I'm so excited to be here. And I want to thank everyone for deciding to join it as well. So it's actually happening. This is going to be amazing. We hope that everybody will chime in with lots of questions and lots of comments. Don't be shy. Please, please, please keep this conversation going. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're all very knowledgeable ladies about a lot of things, so if you have a question, I'm sure somebody can give you an answer. I'll just sit back and put my phone back on mute, and every once in a while you'll hear me chuckle. I live in Tennessee, I transplanted from the north. I'm from Buffalo, so I'm used to the snow that we're getting in Tennessee right now. This past week has been kind of chilly, but I kind of got out of the habit of it. So finding gloves and hats and scarves was a little bit of a challenge this past week, but we're finally starting to thaw out. So that's kind of great. And I'm a mom of 4, grandma of 3, and my youngest is about to get married in a couple of weeks. So I'm really excited about that. There may be a book in that wedding because it's been interesting. And so I'm just grateful to be here. Thanks.
Well, we're excited to have you. And for those of you who don't know me, I'm Willow Cross. I've just published my 25th book. Berry Tales is out. I believe it's still 99 cents, the ebook copy, so grab it if you don't have it. I also run Willow's Indie Book Services, which is just a web page for people who are looking for services to self-publish. They're reputable folks on that site. You don't ever have to worry if you use one of those people that you're going to get scammed, because they come highly acclaimed. And I'm also the director of marketing and advertising for the World of Ink Network. So, and the host of the Paranormal Hour. So I kind of do a lot too. I'm waiting for a movie option. I'm so jealous, Ashley, but not in a bad way. Not in a bad way. I'm so happy for you. I can't wait to see that. I think that's going to be fantastic. And I'm going to be grilling you all the way through this, going, what's happening now? What's happening now? Inquiring minds want to know, and I'm always inquiring. All right, well, let's talk about, we've got our topics for this show, our Creative Ways to Cope with Empty Nest Syndrome, Grandparents Who Parent, The Value of a Smile, Attitude, How to Use It Before You Lose It, and Ways to Relax After a Stressful Week, Not Always Involving Alcohol, which is kind of funny considering that our tagline is with a little bit of rum. I do want to tell you as listeners, if you've seen our logo going around on the internet, it says attacking today's issue with flair, class, and a little bit of rum. The little bit of rum was for Stacy and myself. The other girls don't drink. They're the flair and the class.
I drink wine.
Oh, you drink wine. Well, okay. Well, there we go.
Yes.
That's
I'm
almost rum.
I'm a southern wino.
Oh, wow. Well, first up today, Ashley Fontaine is going to be heading the segment for Creative Ways to Cope with an Empty Nest Syndrome. And Ashley, go right ahead. The floor is all yours.
Well, thank you. Well, you know, for those of us that are parents, our whole life is, especially for the mother, is wrapped around raising our children. And, you know, I'm a mother. I have three stepchildren, and I have one son who's 25. So I've experienced this. It's not like I'm, I have a degree in this, but I guess in the ways of the world I do since I've experienced it. But, we tend to, as women, we are nurturers by nature, and we wrap ourselves up in raising our children and making sure that they are ready to go out into the world, because eventually that's the whole point. You raise them and they are to leave the nest and go out to be adults. But when that happens, there a myriad of emotions hit you. You're excited for them to be able to go and live their own life, but you're also sad because all of a sudden this person or persons, depending on how many children you have, everything that you've poured your life into is gone, and they don't need you anymore like they did when they were little. And I know for me personally, even to this day, when I look at my children, I still see them as little kids. It's very hard to view them as an adult. And so, of course, it is an actual recognized syndrome, empty nest syndrome is, by the psychological associations around the country and the world. And it usually happens mostly to women, and it tends to occur during the autumn because that's usually when the kids leave for college or, you know, leave the house for the first time. And it leaves you with a sense of imbalance because now you don't have that person to pour all of your energy into, and, of course, you miss them. And you worry constantly about, is the world treating them kindly? Are they okay? Do they have clean clothes? Are they eating? You know, the whole nine yards.
Right.
So it constantly wears you down, and a lot of people don't realize that they're going to experience that when it happens. And they think, well, I'm just depressed for, you know, a myriad of other reasons. But the truth is you do suffer separation anxiety. And some people deal with it in unhealthy ways, and I really wanted to discuss some healthy ways to do it. First of all, realize that what you're feeling is natural and normal. It's part of being a parent. It's part of being the mother. It's even a little bit more difficult on single mothers who have spent their entire life of their children being the mother and the father because now they have nothing to focus on. It is hard to go through. It's painful to know that job that you've held for so many years no longer is necessary to a point. Once you get past that first part of sadness, eventually you will realize the kids still do need you. Guess what? They're going to come home with clothes from college and want you to wash them. They're going to come home and say, will you fix my favorite meal? They're going to call you when things don't go well and have questions. And the biggest way to overcome, in my experience, has been keep the connection open. Just because they're not living under your roof anymore and under your watchful eye doesn't mean that, first of all, they still don't need you. And second of all, you haven't lost them. You've done your job. And you need to be, you know, relish in the proud moments of watching them grow and learn and keep the connection open. When you have that moment when you're just feeling so depressed and wondering what's going on in their lives, pick up the phone and call them. send them an email, send them a text message, let them know that, you know, you're still thinking about them. And it might annoy them at first, but eventually they'll come around. That's the most important thing, is to keep the communication open, because that's what you miss.
Right.
The second thing is to realize that you're not the only one. And one of the best ways to be able to deal with it, and most people have this connection. You have friends that have children that are, you know, sometimes around the same age, and that, guess what? They're experiencing the same thing. So connect with other people that you know are going through the same separation anxiety issues, and talk to them. It's no different than joining any other kind of group for people who knows better how you feel than someone that's going through it at the moment.
Right.
Women are really good at talking, and so being able to share how you feel and the sadness, you'll be surprised when you find out, hey, it's not just me. Everybody else feels the same way.
Right.
That's a big, important factor for women, is to be able to share. Another thing is we spend, as we raise our children, we spend so much of our time concerned about them, worrying about them, making sure that, you know, homework's done and clothes are clean and food is ready, da-da-da-da-da, that they're hanging out with what they're doing, that we kind of push aside who we are. And it does give you a chance, when they do leave the nest finally, to go back and explore who you really are. You know, what things did you put on the back burner that you can go back and explore, such as if you like to write, or if you like to draw, or if you enjoy jogging but you never had time because you were sleep deprived. Whatever the thing is that you enjoy doing, go back to it. Go back and relive that and realize, okay, there was a reason why I enjoyed doing this, and I really wish I wouldn't have put it off for so long, and do it. If it's taking an art class, or if it's, you know, taking a cooking class, or learning how to cook for a smaller group of people in the household, whatever it is, go back and do it. If you've had something that you've always wanted to do but never did because you didn't have the time, this would be a good time to explore it. Fill that void that you have with filling up who you are again, because we, as women, tend to get lost when that happens, when we're so busy with all
right.
the things that come about with raising a child. So those are
right.
some really, you know, good ways to do the healthy thing. You know, on an occasion, it's okay to have a pity party and cry. That's part of it. I mean, we do that. We cry when they're born. We cry when they go to kindergarten. We cry when they graduate high school. We cry when they cry, you know. So
yeah.
it's okay to feel those emotions. Don't try to push them aside and pretend that they're not there, because once you embrace them, then you can move on to the next level. And, you know, we try to fill the void in some ways sometimes that are not healthy, such as drinking too much, or even trying to relive our own teenage years by going out and doing things that we shouldn't be doing. But those things are only temporary. You need something that's going to fulfill you as a person. I have a friend that she had three children, and when her last, she was fine when the first two left. She was actually glad to get them out of the house because it, you know, took down her level of things she had to do. But when the baby finally left, she fell apart. And
yeah.
she went on, you know, she went on a drinking binge, and she went back into the party mode from high school because she was a single mom and didn't have anybody to share her angst with. There was no partner in her life that she could sit and cry with and say, oh, let's look at pictures of so-and-so when they were little, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it was very destructive for her. It took her 2 years to get to the point where she finally realized that this was not the way to handle it. She almost tried being a friend to her child rather than continuing on as the parent. And it was very difficult
yeah.
on her, and it caused quite a bit of embarrassment over the years. But once she realized that, you know, and embraced what she was feeling and actually dealt with it instead of shoving it under the rug, her life changed around. So my suggestion is to find that thing, whatever it is, that you have always wanted to do, or that you used to do that you quit doing during the child-raising years, and embrace it. Do what makes you happy, and don't feel guilty about it. It's okay to go on with your life now that this section of it's done. You'll always be their mom. You'll always be there for them. there's never a time when they're not going to need you. It doesn't. I mean, I still need my mom, and I'm 48 years old. When I've got something to say, I pick up the phone and call her. That is not going to change. You will always be their mom, but you're also having to come back and be you. And that sometimes for some women is really hard to let go. So make sure that whatever it is that you do is to benefit you in a healthy way instead of doing it something that's destructive.
I find your suggestion about the cooking class is really interesting and very on point. All of my children are grown now, too. And one of the most difficult things that I've heard other people say when the kids are gone is getting used to cooking for just two or just one, because there's a lot of single parents, mm-hmm. their kids. And so they quit eating or they start eating out because it's actually easier to stop and get a burger than it is to, you know, make a dinner. And
right.
I think that that's a fantastic idea to get out and take a cooking class, learn to make smaller meals, and it is, well, if you like to cook anyhow, it's fun. Now, there's some folks who just don't like to cook. I think I have burned, it's funny because my best friend was going through empty nest syndrome, and she was really having a hard time several years ago. And at the time, I had 7 kids at home still. So I was thinking, wow, whine a little more over all that freedom. That's just freaking wonderful. You know, what's wrong with you? And I really didn't understand because, you know, when you raise a very large family, you get to the point where you're almost wishing the years away because you're like, can I take this another 10 years before they're all gone? And I just didn't understand until my kids all grew. And I still have kids living at home, even though they're grown. But they will all be moving out within the next couple of months. So I'm sort of facing this upcoming event with a little bit of trepidation because what am I going to do in this house all by myself? I know, thanks to you, I'm going to take a cooking class. That's a good idea.
Well, and, you know, it really is a major upheaval. It is one of the life events that you won't ever forget, no different than, you know, getting married or having a child. It is something that sticks with you because you've spent so much of time and invested, you know, every ounce of your energy in this little person,
right,
and watching them grow up. And then all of a sudden, they're not there anymore. And when you've pushed aside everything else in your life and focused on just this one thing, when it's gone, it kind of leaves you like lost in the woods. You don't really know what to do. And you feel, you know, the separation anxiety, you feel worry about them. You don't know really what to do with yourself, especially if you have been a single parent. Now you're coming home to an empty home. And that's an extreme. It's a little different. Like in my case, I have a spouse. So when I have those moments of, you know, pity party me, well, I don't have anything to do anymore, at least I have someone to talk to. And, of course, they understand because even though they may not feel it on the same level as the wife does, the husband goes through it too because they're a parent as well. So at least you have someone to talk to about it. But it doesn't do you any good to talk to your friends that have not experienced it, or anybody for that matter, because they can sympathize, but they cannot empathize. It really is important to...
They don't understand.
Right.
I feel bad now because I... Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, you're right, because, I mean, I can't counsel someone that has lost a child or that has lost a parent because I have not experienced those yet. I can sympathize and feel the emotion, but I can't really truly understand or help because I have not been through it. So it's very important to share with someone that has or is going through it so you they can understand and you can understand where they're coming from. Those things are very important because, like you said, you have someone talking to you that you have no clue what they're going through, and you hear what they're saying, but it doesn't truly register on an emotional level. And so you kind of really don't know what to say. Like you said, well, geez, get over it. Aren't you glad that your house is quiet and you don't have to do mounds and mounds of laundry? Or
oh, yeah.
Listen to people
I used to
about
tell her, you clean your house and it stays that way. Why are you not thrilled with that? You know, I could not understand. It just did not compute with me why she was so upset. And it wasn't that I was trying to be unfeeling or, you know, trying to be obtuse. I just couldn't grasp the whole concept of, wow, I have nothing to do.
Right.
And you know, I don't know. Would any of the rest of you ladies like to weigh in on this? I know you guys have grown children too. How did this affect you?
I cried. I'm a crier. Yeah. In fact, my son went 2 hours away. I live in Florida. He was 2 hours away. I cried all the way there. He was consoling me, saying, Mom, you'll be okay. He even bought me a puppy because he knew how upset I would be. Yes.
Well,
except the puppy loves my husband more than that. Yeah, more than me. So anyway, she still does. She's 12 and she still loves him more than me. But anyway, and then it was so funny because at the freshman year he couldn't have a car. So to come home, I'd have to go get him because my husband worked a lot. And so this one weekend, it was maybe 7 months later, he called me up, said, Mom, I need to come home this weekend. And I said, why? And my husband looked over at me and goes, didn't take long, did it? And I'm like, oh, my gosh, what? You know, I mean, but it was, yeah, I sobbed the whole way there, the whole way back. My mom and dad came over the next day to take me to lunch. My daughter, luckily I lived in the same town, and she had to live in the dorms because she got a scholarship, so she played softball. And so she'd come home on weekends to do her laundry. But then we moved from San Antonio to Florida, and I was there for her freshman year, but her sophomore, the end of the freshman year, we moved. And I remember when she came with us to help us move, and then when I put her on that plane, I sobbed. I was like, oh, my gosh, I'm abandoning her. And I felt like such a bad mother. But even though they only live, like, 2 hours away, well, no, both of them live, like, an hour away, but it's still, you know, that motherly thing, you still feel a little abandoned because you did everything for them. You were there for them, and I feel good when they call me up. My son calls me almost every day because we write books. But my daughter, I don't hear from her as much, but I know, you know, that's how she is. And when she does call, we talk for an hour. But I feel good that they both feel secure in themselves, that they can make it without their mother, which it's hard to get your head around when they're just leaving home.
Yeah.
So yeah,
it really is.
That is the
hardest part because they have been so reliant upon you for so long, and watching them. I remember the hardest I ever cried, and it was not when my son left, but the hardest I ever cried was the day he was 10 years old, and we, up until that point, when we would go somewhere, his hand was always in mine. I mean, we just two peas in a pod. But we had pulled into Walmart's parking lot, and we were getting ready to go in. We had just left a baseball game, and he had his little uniform on. And we got out, and I reached for his hand, and he jerked away, and he said, Mom, I don't want people to see me holding your hand.
Aww.
And I just remember that just broke my – of course, I didn't cry then. But later that night, I just remembered, oh, my God, he's growing up. You know, that moment when, oh, they don't need me anymore. You know, and you experience that. The minute they leave the house, you know, it is hard to deal with, and it's very painful because you almost feel like they've, like you said, like they've abandoned you, you know, all of a sudden I'm not good enough to have a relationship with anymore because you think you're an adult. You know? So it's hard sometimes to let go because you've spent so much time and effort making sure that everything in their life is the way it should be, and then all of a sudden they don't need you anymore, and you're like, wait, when did this job end?
Right. Well, and then this is a good segue to my segment, which is grandparents who parent, because there is another aspect, the opposite end of the spectrum, is when they don't leave, or when they leave sometimes, and you end up raising grandchildren. this has become a very big issue in the United States. According to About Parenting in 2009, 7.5 million children, that's 9% of all children living in the United States, were living with grandparents.
Oh,
now, that's
gosh.
Not to say that grandparents were their sole provider, but they were living with grandparents. In 2010, the census said that 2.9 million children in the United States were being primarily raised by their grandparents. And that, from 2005, is an increase of 2.5 million. So that's a big jump. The last statistics I could find were taken in 2011. 7.7 million children, 1 in 10, were living with a grandparent, and approximately 3 million of these are being cared for primarily by that grandparent. So it's become a very big issue. There's lots of, in doing a little research for this segment, there's lots of factors at play here. The economy for sure is one. People are moving back home. They're moving back in with mom and dad. They can't make it on even two incomes anymore. And that's rough. And then, of course, there's other things at play, too, like illegal activities and parents going to jail and children being taken from parents for, you know, various reasons. But that's, 3 million children. And that was in 2011. That's a lot of grandparents raising kids. They say that there's a lot of issues related to raising your grandchildren. There, and some concerns on aboutparenting.com. I found a really nice article. It was a good article, very informative, about risks for grandparents that are raising kids. They say that they feel more stressed because due to their own their concerns about their own health and finances, because suddenly a lot of elderly people are living on a fixed income and now they're suddenly raising grandchildren that they weren't expecting to have to raise. Housing is a big issue because some of these folks are living in a senior citizen complex and can't have children. Medical care for the children, that is something that's hard for them to attain. Even now with all of these new things that they put into play for insurance, it's still difficult at times for, you know, income-related insurance. You may end up having to pay, and it's not something you can afford. The loss of time for themselves, their dream of retirement dies, changes their social life, and then there's the emotional toll. And that seems to be the biggest issue for grandparents who are raising grandchildren. Their feelings range from fear to anger, exhaustion, resentment, grief, then shame and guilt because they feel bad that they're angry that they're in this situation. Because I don't know how many of you are grandparents. I'm a grandparent. I'm a grandparent of a whole bunch. I've got more grandkids than I have kids. Apparently my children think they need to repopulate the planet. So we got a lot of babies running around in this family. And I have raised a couple of my grandkids for a period of time. And it is exceedingly difficult because you are tired. There is a reason why young folks have babies. There is a reason, because when you get older, you know, I'm pushing 50. My body doesn't work the way it used to. And it's all well and good when I can play with them and fill them up on sweets and send them home. But when you can't be that kind of grandma when you're a mommy too, because you're, you know, then you have to deal with the sugar fit, which is not fun. And disciplining becomes an issue because, you know, I've had one of my daughters the other day, my grandson did something and I just laughed and she said, "Wow, if that would have been me, you would have spanked me." And I said, "Listen, you weren't nearly as fun as he is." I enjoy him tremendously. It's not my job to spank him. It's your job. You take care of it. I'm just going to laugh. But it's hard. It's hard when you have to be the disciplinarian and you don't get to be the kind of grandparent you want to be. I'm sure everybody has their own opinions about their grandparents. My grandma was the most wonderful woman that ever hit this planet, I can assure you. I thought the sun rose and set in her, and it wasn't just because she gave me everything I wanted, because she did do that. She spoiled me terrible. But it was because it was that there's that love that you can't do anything wrong. You know what I mean? That feeling that they don't see anything you do wrong, where your parents see every little thing. And that's the kind of grandparent I wanted to be. But you can't be that way when you're raising them. And it's hard. It's really difficult.
Yeah. Now, I don't have grandchildren, knock on wood, yet. But I do work in a legal firm. And
uh-huh.
we see a lot of clients that come in that have legal issues because they are in charge of raising this child. And most of what we see is because, as you mentioned, of illegal activity. And so there's a whole other realm as well as far as the legal ramifications of raising a
right.
child, being the one that's contacted by the school and being the one that's, you know, if
right.
something happens and you have to take them to the hospital, you have to make sure that, you know, you have the legal right to do that. There's lots of things. And then the worst part that happens that we see a lot is when the parents want to have the children back for a variety of reasons, but because of the lifestyle that they've led, they can't. So then it becomes a legal battle of who's going to control the child. And unfortunately, here
right.
in Arkansas, a lot of times what happens is the courts have to step in, and then they provide them an attorney ad litem, and the child gets lost in the court system. So
yeah.
there's lots of things that can happen in terms of not just the emotional and financial impact, but the legal impact as well.
Yes. Yeah, and that's a big thing, especially if you're in a situation where you feel the need to protect your grandchild from your children. Now, that wasn't my case, but I know people who are in that situation. And then what do you do? You know, there's a lot of things you can do for help. First and foremost, just like with Ashley's suggestion, one of the things that you need to do if you are a grandparent raising a grandchild is to find other grandparents who are in the same position as you, because you do need someone to talk to. And people don't always understand if they're not going through the same situation as you. And there are countless support groups online and in the physical world. You can find them. They are everywhere. Seek them out and get help. Another thing that you can do to cope is share the workload. If you are not a single grandparent, which happens quite a bit too, make sure that you're evenly sharing the workload with your spouse as far as the child or children are concerned. It's a discussion that you definitely need to have, and sometimes a hard discussion, because I know we're all women here, but, you know, I'm sure that there's somebody listening that says, man, I can't get my man to take out the trash, and you want him to help with homework?
Not going to happen.
I'm sure, but that is a discussion that you need to have with your spouse, because you will become overwhelmed if you don't. And if it's not your spouse that's helping, maybe you have another grown child who will pitch in. Other people, siblings, cousins, whatever, people in your family, even good friends, that will help you and give you breaks. And remember that just because you've already raised kids doesn't mean that you're not going to need a break. Yeah, you know what you're doing, but you had to take breaks when you were younger raising your children, and you need to take breaks now that you're older, maybe even more than when you were younger. Because if you don't recharge your batteries, you will have nothing left to give. That's a given across the board. You have to take time out for yourself, or you're going to end up completely depleted. prioritize your goals, needs, and wants. If you're dealing with financial issues, make sure that you raise these grandkids like you did your kids. Your kid, if you were the kind of parent who said you're not getting an $80 pair of tennis shoes, then don't feel the need to go buy your grandchild an $80 pair of tennis shoes just because they wanted it. If that's going to mean you guys don't get to eat next week, then obviously they don't need those shoes nearly as bad as you need food. So try to keep your priorities in check. It's easy to spoil them. Trust me, I know it's easy to spoil them because I really had a difficult time saying no. And I turned my little guy into a monster. I did. And then I had to deal with that monster and try to get him lined back up. Take small steps. Attempting to do too much will do you both in. Remember that you're dealing with their emotions as well as your own. They could have abandonment issues as well as many other emotional problems. Move in small steps. Rome wasn't built in a day. Lower your expectations of yourself, especially when it comes to housekeeping. I had a lady say to me when my kids were very young, I had four young children at home and was working full-time, and my kids were just a mess. They would not keep things picked up, and I was come home from work and cook dinner and try to clean and do laundry. And she says, when your kids are grown, do you want them to look back and remember how clean your house was or how much fun they had with Mom? And it really struck me because, yes, I wanted them to be raised in a clean environment, but it really was not important to me that they looked back and went, oh, you could have ate off of our kitchen floors. They were sparkling. It was much more important to me that we enjoyed each other as a family. So keep your expectations in check as well. Find ways to take trips, especially with your spouse, alone, even if it's only an overnight trip somewhere to a family member's house. Get away and take breaks as much as you can. Remember, you're not 20 anymore. And it's okay to ask for help. Never forget that. It's always okay to ask for help. The AARP has a benefits quick link for people who are in financial duress that are raising grandchildren. Get help if you need it. You don't have to do without anything. I mean, well, needs. You don't have to do without necessities. There are different organizations out there who will help you. And remember, this is the key thing that they say, remember why you're doing this. Keep that in mind. Focus on what you've done right and not what you're giving up. At the end of the day, when you're tired and you're laying in bed exhausted and you're thinking, what am I doing? And I had those days where I thought, I can't do this. I am too old. I am too not well. I am too a whole lot of different things. I cannot do this. But that's what kept me going, was remembering that I love them and they need me. And so I was there for them. And for my children, too. You know, they needed me to step in and do that, and I did. And your children, if you're raising your grandchildren, need the same thing. So just hang in there. Now, what do you guys think about all this? What's your opinion on different ways to cope?
Can I say something? This is Sue, and I didn't get to talk before when Ashley was talking about being an empty nester. Yeah. So I kind of am in a unique situation where I am both. I am an empty nester. I'm raising my grandkids, kind of like you, Willow. But uh-huh. I'm not raising my grandkids alone. We're a blended home. So what happened is my husband was never around anyway, and then we divorced. But so I pretty much raised all four of my own kids on my own. And from the time the youngest was like 8 and she's now 26, and he took off and did his thing, and we were still married and the whole thing. So he still had parental influence, et cetera. But he was never a factor in the, I was mom and dad. I got Mother's Day and Father's Day cards, which was really awesome for me. And so when my youngest, who was 7 years younger than the next youngest, so I had three that were super close together, and they were like triplets. So I kind of, raising them was a blur. You know, we got them to games, we got them to school, we got them, you know, all the stuff they needed to do, and it was like boom, 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 and they were gone. And then I had 7 years of my youngest still being home when the next youngest had graduated. So her and I got super, super close. And when she finally went off to college, she went to a college that was 14 hours away. And the reason she did that was because she didn't want to be stuck with me the rest of her life, which was a good thing. At first I was kind of like, what? You know, we did everything together. You played hockey. I drove you all over the country to play hockey. You know, we had so many good times together. What are you talking about? You have to run away from me. Well, what she wanted to do was be independent. She didn't want to have, because she knew I was holding on to her, because I still wanted to be a mom. That was my job. That's all I knew. I wasn't a wife because he was never around. So I was a mom. That was my job. And I loved it. And I had a regular job and stuff like that. So when she went off, she prepared me. She was so smart. She prepared me for the year before she left to be ready for her not to be around. You have to find things to do, Mom. You got to go and get activities. You got to go back to what you love and, you know, do all that. All those things you suggested, Ashley, that was my 17-year-old telling me to do, which is kind of amazing. She was smart,
very
mature young lady. Yep, she's a pretty awesome kid. And then, so then she went off to college. And so I traveled back and forth between her at school and making my little lists of things I was going to do. But I was still a mom to her. She was that far away. If something happened, you know, like when her car flipped over and I had to, you know, rush up there and help her, and she was fine. She didn't get hurt, but which was fortunate. But, you know, and hockey games in the middle of winter, going back up to Pennsylvania to go and through the snow and all that kind of stuff. So when it finally happened, officially the cut came where I was no longer mom. I had about a year where she was in a job. She lived on her own. She moved in with her boyfriend. My other three kids were doing great. And then I was like, oh, God, what do I do now? I sat down and I said, what do I want to do? Just like you suggested. So I started writing again. That was great. I really enjoyed that. A friend suggested getting involved in what kind of things you like to do. I wanted to go to movies, but it was just me. Who am I going to go with? It's no fun going alone. I wanted to, you know. So I joined meetup.com and found a bunch of different groups that I could get involved in that had interesting things that I like to do. I like to knit and crochet. I found a craft group. I like to write. I found a great writer's group here in Nashville. And wonderful people that I'm still friends with. Thank you all. And I found a friend that started a singles group that just went to movies and plays and things like that. And we're still great friends. And so I do all those things. So I wasn't as abandoned as I thought I would be. And then, so that went for like a year, and then I realized I don't like coming home alone. I have a dog, but that's it. I just didn't enjoy coming home to an empty house. I missed the bustle and the chaos and the dirty house and the whole deal that comes with having kids. And so my daughter and her husband have three kids, and they were looking to get out of their home where they were. So I bought a house, and we all moved in together. So now we're a blended family, which is kind of a unique situation. I live in the half of the house, and they have the other half of the house. And, you know, I get a door that I can close, but I'm still part of their life. I have to walk away when it's time to punish them or raise them or do any of that, because it's not my responsibility. But I still get the wonderful joy of being in their lives. They get me in their lives. I get them in their lives, which is great. And I think that's really important for any grandparent out there who is feeling overwhelmed, is to remember that the main focus is how you are influencing what they're becoming. You have such experience and knowledge, and yeah, it is exhausting some days. Because my 5-year-old granddaughter is just, she never stops. She's got two speeds, sleep and go. That's it. And so, and then the other two, Seriously, I'm not kidding. That is it for her. Sleep and go. That's it. And then there's a 21-month-old, and he's adorable. And then there's an 8-year-old, and he's fun. He's like my buddy now. We go to hockey games together, and we, you know, so I make a positive thing out of it. And there are so many places out there that are willing to help people who have that kind of a situation, like you were mentioning, Willow, that you mm-hmm. can connect up with, especially if you go on to that meetup.com, which is nationwide. And you can find groups that are for grandparents raising their kids and, you know, connect with other grandparents and find places that you can
right.
go as a group so you're not overwhelmed. Or you can
right.
say, you know what, I've got to work Saturday, but the kids want to go roller skating. Are you going to be taking your grandkids? And, you know, I'll bring mine next time. I'll take them to the movies or, you know, things like that. So there's so many ways. You're not doing it alone unless you want to.
Right, right. And
yes,
I think that's really important, and this is a good place to segue into Carol's segment,
when,
The Value of a Smile, because I think that finding happiness amidst the stress is really important. So, Carol, you have the floor, girl.
Thank you. So when I was asked about to pick a topic, you know, I thought, you know, there's so many topics out there. This world is full of craziness and everything, but something I've noticed lately, and I'm a people watcher. I love to watch people. I love to watch their expressions. I love to think what's going on in their minds. And something I've noticed lately, even if I go to Universal, which is in Orlando, I haven't been to the happiest place on earth lately, but even there, there's a not smell, smiling. People aren't smiling. If you smile at them, they kind of look shocked. And it's like, do they think I'm creepy or do I not? And I love to smile. I don't always have things to smile about, but I love to smile. And so yesterday I did an experiment. I went to a craft fair, and it's in this place called The Villages. It's like a giant playground for seniors. And my parents live there, and my mother-in-law. And the craft fair was packed full of people, just packed. I mean, it was just unbearable. My mom's in a scooter, and she was scooting along and trying to get through the throng, and people just didn't look happy. And I'm thinking, why are you out if you're not happy? You know, you're trying to make everybody else miserable. And I thought, well, wait
mm-hmm.
a second, that's not a great way to be. So I started smiling at people, and it was amazing. You know, people just, you know, there was a couple of guys that didn't smile back. I mean, they looked like grumps anyway. But so I went online today and just to look up smiles, because I know about smiles. But I wanted to, you know, because they always say that there's more muscles, takes more muscles to frown than it is to smile.
Right.
And we all know that we like to exercise, right? So so I think maybe that people are using their frowning to use their muscles more, right? No. So I went online, and there's no concrete evidence how many muscles it is to take to smile or how many is to frown. But there was tests done where people were put in situations in universities where they were told to act, you know, to feel frustrated, to put on a face of frustration. And they've monitored their vital signs. And their vital signs matched what they were projecting on their face, because their body did not realize what they, you know, they just knew that they were frowning or they were looking disgusted. And so when they smiled, it made their whole body feel better. I mean, the whole body just kind of relaxed and everything. And I thought, wow, at least that much I did know. I did know that smiling
yeah.
makes you feel good. And, you know, sometimes you don't know what's going on in people's lives. People can put on that fake smile, which I've done so many times, and people say, oh, my God, she's the happiest person in the world. And I'm not. But I made them feel like, you know, and so kind of, I don't know, I go to so many conventions. One of my favorites, Utopia in Nashville, I love to plug them. I was there for the first, and so was Susan, because she was one of the wonderful people that put it together, and Willow was there. and that's how I met her. And there was only a small group of us, like 70 people, but oh my gosh, it was so amazing. We all smiled. There was a lot of people that looked apprehensive, looked scared, looked, you know, but by the end of the weekend, we were all, you know, happy. And so, you know, you go to places, and I think smiles put people at ease. Unless it's a sinister, creepy-looking smile, I see a lot of those. But, no, I ignore those. And those people, I don't know, maybe they don't know how to smile right. But I don't think there's any really way except for looking creepy. So if you see somebody down, smile at them. I mean, it could make change their world. I mean, I don't know how many conversations I've had with people just because I smiled at them. They feel like they're comfortable with you. And like I said, yesterday, it was a real eye-opener. There was not many people smiling. And I don't know, I give out, I know Susan knows, and I don't know if Will remembers, but I give out smiley face pennies. I have. I broke my neck 21 years ago, and I died on the table in my second surgery. And I didn't see the white light, so anybody thinks I saw it, nope, didn't see it. They gave me too much for said, which is a drug that makes you forget. But I thought, this is my second life. You know, my first life, I worried about everything. I just, you know, constant worrier. My second life, I don't worry. I've had a wonderful second life. I've written a book. I've written books with my son. I wrote a book by myself. I never thought I'd write a book by myself. And it went crazy. It was read all over the world. It made me smile. I have my poster up all, everywhere. And sometimes my son asked me, he said, Mom, does it make you smile when you look at the poster? And I said, oh, of course, there's three hot guys on the front. And he said, no, the name, because my pen name is, I lost twins my first pregnancy, and there were Amanda and Jason, and that's my pen name. My kids have always worried about me, and they say, you know, you see that everywhere in the house because the book is everywhere, because I'm proud of what I've done. And so, and I've got initials. I'm sitting in my spare room, and I have AJ sitting on a bookcase. And then I've got all the, you know, the books that we give out to people and everything sitting around, and there's Amanda Jason everywhere. And it makes me smile. And I think it makes me feel happier when I smile because it's a genuine smile. So I wanted to talk about smiling because we need more smiling in the world. I mean, the news, you turn on the news, you hear so many crazy things. I mean, they don't want to give you the happy stuff. Why? I mean, I don't understand that. I do watch the CBS News. No, NBC. Oh, one of them. I don't remember. I'm older. I forget. But it was one with Brian Williams. And Brian Williams is not on there now because he lied. But at the end of the segment, they always have something that either makes me bawl. I love to cry. I'm very emotional. Or makes me smile. And I always save that and I show it to my husband. Because, you know, he's a man. And you know men, their emotions are not geared like us. They're not wired like we are.
Right.
And even my mother thinks I'm too emotional. But she said, you're always smiling, Carol. You're always smiling. And I said, Mom, you know, I have those little crinkle lines, you know, in my my eyes, you know. I've earned every one of those lines, okay. I don't want to be known as the stoic, frowny person. So this year at Utopia, I'm going to be the greeters of the newbies. I'm going to try and make them feel comfortable that they're coming to a convention, which I think they should do at every convention because I've been to some of the big ones, and people look lost. And you go up and smile and say, hi, how are you doing? Do you write books? Are you a book blogger? You know, and or you're a book lover, you know, and they look at me like, oh, my God, she's crazy. You know, she just walked up to me. But then I've met some of my best friends doing that. So I guess what I wanted to say today is that I want everybody to go around and smile at least once a day because, number one, it helps your heart. It helps everything in your system. It helps your brain function better, believe it or not. That's what I read on one site, and I believe that because I believe a smile is good for you. And my other topics, I've already got my topics lined up in my head. One next month is going to be really, really got me going. And so I just wanted to put it out there that smiling is good. frowning is bad. And
well, I agree. I agree with you. Go ahead.
Go ahead. You agree with me? Oh, good.
I agree with you.
Okay.
You know, one of the things that I've said many, many times, even to my own children, when you're going through something that's really rough, put a smile on your face and lie to yourself until you believe it. Keep saying everything's going to be all right. I can handle this.
Yes.
And sooner or later, you'll handle it. You can handle it, and you'll still have that smile on your face. I am a firm believer in lying to yourself. I really am. I don't think you should lie to other people. But I think sometimes we need to just grin and bear it. You know, that saying came around for a reason. And
well, last year I got a lot of people crying at Utopia. I won an award for Amanda Jason. And I say Amanda Jason because I still don't think she's me. She's not me. It's something that I just took on to write this book. Because, and the reason why I changed my name was because we write young adult, middle grade, my son and I. I didn't want any of those kids who love our books to be reading something new adult or adult. You know, I do have that presence to keep that separated. And so when I get up to give my speech, of course, you know, I told them that this meant the world to me. And I think I smiled. I don't remember. I'm pretty sure I was smiling and crying at the same time. And then afterwards, everybody kept saying, "Oh, my God, Carol, you made me ugly cry. Oh, my God, Carol, you made me." But they were smiling while they were saying it. And they hugged me. And it was like, oh, my God, I made them cry, but I made them smile. And so the closing ceremonies the next day, I kind of cut some jokes. I, you know, jokingly said, "I'm not going to make you cry today. I just want to make you smile." I said, "You never know what somebody's going through. It's something that I very strongly believe that don't judge somebody. Don't ever judge." And I hear I'm preaching right now, but I can because I think I'm the oldest right here right now. maybe not listening, but in this group, okay? Don't judge anybody because you never know. A prime example, I'll tell you this. I used to go to my GYN office. I saw this one doctor who, very homely looking, overweight, and I gelled with her because, you know, I feel like I'm homely looking and I'm overweight. So I never felt threatened. But there was a PA in there, and she was all with the high heels. She looked gorgeous, the blonde hair. Everything looked in place, right? And I thought, I'll never go see her. She'll make me feel so inferior. No, not going to see that woman. No way. So last June, I called up because I had a problem. And they said, well, Dr. So-and-so is out of town, and we have the male doctors, but they can't see you for a couple of weeks. I'm thinking, no, I don't want to go see the male doctors. And they said, but our PA is available. And I'm thinking, oh, God, if I didn't have to go, I wouldn't go, but I have to go. She's the most wonderful, down-to-earth person I've ever met in my whole life. I absolutely love her. So see, I judged her. I thought she was this cold, you know, I'm better than everybody else kind of person. And I was so wrong. And I hate being wrong, you know, but, you know, I worked through it and everything. So I'm smiling right now because I'm such an idiot and I sound like I'm an idiot. I know.
No, you don't.
But anyway, I promise you next month I'll be more serious. Well, no, not really, because it's hard for me to be really, really serious. But I do have a serious topic next month that's going to be really, really close to my heart. Anyway, and I thank Susan Burdoff because she gave me that thing. And Susan Burdoff, you made me smile. Okay. I was going to say, Susan made me smile.
I want to add something to what...
She should... Well, can I just say something real quick? Real quick?
Oh, sure. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Susan sent us all little gifts. And I think everybody else got a gift, right? Yeah, I hope they all did because I'm going to really put my foot in it. Okay. And she made me smile when I opened up that gift. Just when even before I opened it, I smiled because she thought of me. So my thought to everybody else here today, go out, do something nice for somebody, smile, okay? You'll never know what you get back because even though giving a smile, I get something back tenfold, okay?
Yeah,
so,
always.
Anyway,
always.
Okay.
What did you want to add to that, Ashley?
That was me. I was going to say, because we all are writers, obviously we're people watchers. And you are so on target about that moment when you release a smile and how it affects other people. And I just wanted to throw in a little story that happened to me not too long ago. I work in downtown Little Rock, which I don't know how many people out there are aware, but Little Rock's one of the most dangerous cities in terms of violent crime in the U.S. per capita. And I tend to go a lot of times to the gas station that's not too far from where I'm work on my way home. And it is not one of the most friendliest places. It's there's homeless people outside. There's been a lot of crime there. But the people that know me, the same people that work there, they see me a lot because I come in there to get gas on my way home, whatever. But they are so stressed out because they are worried about every single person that walks in that door. Oh, my God, is this going to be a criminal? So I make it a point. I'm a smiler, too, and I make it a point to be overly friendly because I feel like they need that. And when I went in one day, there were several people at the counter, and they were not being very friendly to the poor gentleman that was working the counter, and he just looked so beyond stressed. he had that look of, oh, my God, I so want to leave and go on vacation. So when it was my turn and I went up there, I just started cutting up. I gave him a hard time. I teased him. I made him laugh. I made him smile. And when I started to walk out, he was like, thank you. And so that, for me, as you were saying before, the power of a smile and being kind to someone else, that is, especially a stranger, means so much because, as you said before, you have no clue what that person is going through personally. And to be able to see another human being that puts a smile on their face and treats them with respect, sometimes that might be what it needs for them to get through the day. So it is so important to be able to do that. And I just love your happy attitude. I just had to throw that in there.
Well, good. And it makes you feel good, doesn't it, Ashley? Doesn't it make you feel good that man probably it made his whole day,
Exactly. Over something that took 2 seconds of my time and didn't cost me anything. But just to be kind to another human being. That is so important, especially in the world that we live in today.
It is. Yes, definitely.
Speaking of attitudes, my segues, I'm going to work on my segues, folks. I'm sorry. I know they're kind of screwy today. But our next section is with Susan, and she is going to be discussing attitude, how to use it before you lose it. Susan, the floor is all yours.
And it's so funny that you said that, Willow, about not segueing in, because I think it's perfect. I think everything is fitting together like a great big jigsaw puzzle. It's kind of amazing how we're all ticking and tying in with each other. But it's true that the attitude that you present to the world is the attitude that people are going to remember you for. And I want to talk a little bit about, we all know, like you were saying, Ashley, about your smiling at that person at the cash register who's just doing their job. It's not their fault gas is so high or the weather sucks or, worry that we're out of milk or, I don't have your favorite candy bar in this. It's not my, it's not their fault. And sometimes we forget that. And we'll go into some place and I do this. I'm guilty of it too, although I work really hard not to do it as much anymore. I'm just having a rotten day, and I walk in there with a chip on my shoulder, and I just want to yell at somebody, and by God, you don't have my favorite bag of chips. What are you, crazy? What is, and you sit there, and then when you leave, and you're back in your car, you're like, what? But I don't know. That's not me. But there was some evil twin that went in there and did that. And so I always feel like I need to go back and apologize, but then I'm worried I'm going to look even worse, so I don't do it. But I've made it a decision after listening to everyone, especially Carol with her wonderful Be a Smile. And she is a happy person. That's not fake. Anybody who knows Carol knows how wonderful she is. She gives the best darn hugs. She's always happy to see people. She's never met a stranger. I mean, Will Rogers could be her twin. It's just, it's amazing to me how comfortable and happy I am whenever I talk to her. So, any of us, you know. What?
Blushing.
What, Carol?
I'm blushing.
And, you're blushing? I thought you said you were. I was like, okay, let's talk over the flushing. But yeah, she's blushing. She has red hair, so the flushing kind of matches, so that's pretty good. But attitude is one of those things that you can make or break your reputation as well as anybody, you know, anybody else's day. And so it is a serious subject. I always make jokes about it, but there's this quote that really struck me when I was doing a little research on attitude by Winston Churchill, and it says, attitude is a little thing that makes a big difference. That's it in a nutshell. Everything that you do is reflected in your attitude, and how your day is going to go makes a difference on what your attitude is when you get up. If you get up and you're grumbling, oh, God, it's Monday. Oh, yeah, it's tomorrow, isn't it? If you get up with that attitude, you are not going to have a good day. You're not. Because there's nothing that's going to get you out of that frame of mind of it's going to suck. Today is going to just suck. And it will. It will. It'll drag you down. And I had, not too long ago, I was out driving during the day. My job, I'm a volunteer coordinator with a hospice. And so working with hospice, you realize that we're all on a deadline. We don't know when it's coming. We don't know how it's coming. It could be a disease. It could be a car accident. It could just be your heart gives out. It could be anything. You don't know when it's coming. And what is the last thing that you want somebody to remember about you? So every time now when I stop and I think about, oh, I'm having a crappy day, I go in my office, I close my door if I need to, or I leave the office if I feel like anything I'm going to do or say is going to, you know, make anyone else feel bad, I don't want to do that. We've got, every one of us has a tough enough job out there in the real world. We don't need somebody else bringing their downers, you know, into our atmosphere. So I try really hard not to do that. But I was driving around the other day, and I got up, and it was before the storm hit last week, so it was like 2 weeks ago, and I was having a horrible day. Couldn't drag myself out of bed. I was tired. I had stayed up way too late writing, and my own fault, when I got up in the morning, I just was like clumping out of the house, and I didn't dress very well. I didn't put on makeup. You know, I had this chip on my shoulder, and I walked into the office, and my boss said, hey, you want to come in here for a sec? I need to ask you something. And she sat me down, and she said, hey, I just wanted you to know that last week we had two of the patients call that you delivered flowers to. Their families were so grateful, and I wanted you to know that. And I thought, what? She's not going to yell at me because I'm grouchy? She wants to thank me for something? And so I thought, whoa, that is so nice of her. And then a little while later, I thought, oh, that was sneaky of her because she knew I was having a crappy day already. And she turned it around. She said, focus. Refocus your attitude. Refocus what you're looking at and understand why you're doing the things you do. And so that's my challenge to everybody is over the next few weeks before we have our next call, I want everyone next time we get together, tell me something that you did that totally reversed your attitude in a day. And it could be just a little thing because it's stuff that can help other people. I always try and find something joyful in the day so that my attitude will switch around a little bit. And if I can't, if I'm just not going to get over it, then I find somewhere to go until I'm over my funk. And I don't bring it down on anyone else. So, and there's another quote. I love those little memes that everybody throws around out there on Facebook. And there was another one that I saw, and it says, a positive attitude may not solve all your problems, but it will annoy enough people to make it worth the effort. Do it. It's so cool. I love your think of walking up somebody that has an expression on their face like the grumpy cat and giving them one of those smiles that Carol wants you to give out to everybody.
Yes.
Doesn't cost anything, right, Ashley? I mean, you can just fling it out there and see what happens. It's amazing. It's like a stone tossed out into a lake and all the ripples that it does. So anyway, that's my challenge to everyone is think positive. Think positive and be positive.
I agree. So, does anybody have anything they'd like to add?
Oh, but it is so true. It's almost like a virus. If you start with one positive comment, it will change the atmosphere in a room in a heartbeat.
Mm-hmm.
It really
right.
will. You know, in the same way with a negative comment. If you want things to slide downhill, just throw one of the, you know, something negative out and bam, you're in the middle of an argument. But if you throw out a joke or a smile or something funny
right.
that makes people laugh, it completely changes the whole temperament of everybody.
Right.
Because really, if you stop and think about it, everybody else that you're in contact with is having the same struggles that you are, you know, and sometimes they're
yeah.
even worse than what you are. And a lot of times they're thinking the same exact things that you are, and they don't know how to deal with them. So make them laugh. And then when you do,
right,
it completely changes everything. And then instead of having an argument, everybody's laughing. It's so amazing how that works.
Right. Well, one of the things you said that, and it brought this to mind. There was a situation. I deal with a lot of people, obviously. I am constantly dealing with people. Usually online, but some in public too. And every so often you run into those folks, and everybody's met them, just the old grumpy pants who just act like they're afraid if
the
they
Walters,
crack a smile, it'll Walters break their face.
The
right. And I have found that the best way, if you're dealing with someone who is in a seriously foul mood, or maybe they just have a foul personality, that complimenting them is a good way to, first of all, set the standard for your conversation, because you've been nice to them, so now they feel like they need to reciprocate. And it does change their mood. I was dealing with a young woman not so long ago, and she was very, we were at the DMV. Ugh. She was just really kind of hateful with me. And I was trying to be very nice and kind, and she just was very abrupt and short. And finally I said, "Girl, where did you get that necklace? That is just beautiful." And it really was. It wasn't like I was just looking for something to say. It was a beautiful necklace. And she grinned and told me the whole story about how she found it and that she got it on sale, and it cost her like $40 less than what the regular price was. And do you know, by the time I left there, I had everything I needed. And it was done quickly and easily, and there was no more stress or drama, simply by saying, "I love that necklace." I think it's really important when you're dealing with someone who's got a bad attitude to try to change their attitude. Things will go so much smoother for you. Now, some people, you're fighting a losing battle, but you should at least try. I really think that
exactly
that it makes things go smoother, and it's not just about, you know, my kids would say, well, kissing butt, but it's not about that. It's about having effective conversations where you can find solutions to whatever problem it is that you're, you know, dealing with at the time when you're dealing with other people. So, sorry, rambling. That's a great segment,
no,
Susan.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Well, can I say one more thing before we go?
Yeah, yeah.
Just that when you're flinging that attitude out there, just remember that you are not just representing yourself when you do that, but you are also representing whatever you're out there to do. So if you're just out there as yourself, yeah, that's one thing. But if you're out there as your company, or you're out there as a representative of your book, say an author, and that's the other thing I wanted to mention. I went to an event in Tennessee. It was Mount Utopia, an author signing event not too long ago, and there was an author there who, I don't know what the situation was, I just know that I was at a table with another author, and we were chatting, and a group of people came by, and they would not stop talking about this author, and it wasn't nice. Everything they said was, well, she was mean. She was yelling at people. She was, you know, she was bitchy. She was, can I say that on the radio? And she was
Well, you just did, so yeah.
Right? Sorry. It was just horrible. Do you think anybody bought a book from that woman after that? Do you think anybody will forget the way that she made them feel? No, because she was
right.
She was horrible. And it could be that she had something bad going on, but it would have been easier for her to say, hey, I am so sorry. I've got such a horrible attitude today. My house just burned down. That's not what happened. But, you know, I've got to leave, but I can't because I'm waiting. I'm here with somebody, and I'm so sorry. So I apologize if I am upsetting you or being, you know, crabby or something. Just by being vulnerable, you can alleviate so much misunderstanding and, you know,
right.
things like that. I'm not saying share too much, but share enough that people know that they're not the reason that you've got that bad attitude. You know?
Or just
yeah.
stay home.
Well, she's already there.
I know.
And I
just stayed home if she wasn't in a good mood. I know.
Yeah. Yeah, she needed to walk away from the table and leave it up to somebody
yeah.
else and ask for some help and then just step away for a little bit. But I don't think she
that's
intended
so sad.
To get that. Yeah, that's a shame.
But
yeah.
I think,
yeah.
Had she...
But had...
Had she known our friend Kelly...
she could have done...
She, my Kelly and... might have been able to tell her ways to relax. After her stressful week.
There you go. That's right.
That didn't involve alcohol.
Alcohol.
Right. Well, see, here's the story. Here's
somebody hand that woman a glass of rum.
Well, here's the deal. I had to say when to relax without alcohol because I'm on a medication now and I can't drink. Dagnabbit.
Oh, my God. How awful.
I implore you. It is. And when I do, I just become deathly ill. So it's something I have to stay away from, and it is a major bummer. So I had to find other ways to
chocolate.
Make myself relax. So I found several, and a lot of them are very similar. But one we've already talked about, and I think it's probably the most useful, is to laugh. And whenever
yes.
you're feeling stressed, one of the things I used to do, because I worked in a job where it would make me feel just tight, wound up, you know, and all just tense all the time. I would take a break at lunch, and I would go to a card shop, and I would read funny cards, like those Maxine cards or, you know, just anything humorous to get myself tickled and make me laugh. And it always helped. And sometimes I'd go with a friend and we'd share cards back and forth and we would laugh with each other. And it really makes a difference because when you laugh, of course, or when you give someone a hug, you release endorphins in the brain. And that really helps to lower your blood pressure and it helps to relax your body because when you're laughing, the muscles that you use, even in your mouth widens and it just really relaxes everything that, you know, that you've got from either the, you know, from at least in your face. And that makes a big difference in how you feel.
Right, right.
And this all kind of goes back to everything we've talked about today, being a, you know, a grandparent raising a child, being an empty nester, attitude, and, you know, all of the things that we've talked about, stress management is a way to help get control of some of that. And another way to relax without alcohol is breathing exercises. And one of the things I read, and I got a lot of this from WebMD, which I really respect that website. I think it's, you know, got a lot of real information on it and useful
mm-hmm.
information. And one of the things that they mentioned is not only with the breathing exercises, but to be present, be in the moment. And if you're somewhere, let's say you're outside, or if you're not outside, walk outside, you know, lean against the building, sit on a bench, close your eyes, and just be. Just listen to what's going on around you. Listen to the wind rustling the leaves. Listening to the birds, the crickets, the, you know, whatever time of day it happens to be or wherever you happen to be, just take a few minutes and just be present. Just be in the moment. Listen to your own breathing. One of the things I really enjoy doing is spending time in the water snorkeling. And the reason why is I can hear myself breathe. And it, to me, that is so relaxing. And I know we went, one of my friends and I, we went swimming with manatees in Crystal River, a little bit north of where I live in Florida. And you, not only could you hear yourself breathe, but you could hear the manatees munching on the seagrass at the bottom of the river where we were. And I found that so relaxing. And it was just, you know, just like I said, being in the moment, take a few minutes, deep breath in, deep breath out, close your eyes, listen to what's going on around you, and just kind of let all those thoughts float away. And even if it's just for a few minutes, it can really help to relax you. One of the other things that I found that I really liked, my favorite, of course, was the laugh out loud, but exercise. That is the, you know, the final thing that I'll stress. And the other thing, the thing I like to do is when I'm really, really wound up, is walk. You know, take a walk around. We live in a neighborhood with a lake, and there's a beautiful walking path around the lake, and it's about 2.5 miles. And by the time I'm done with the 2.5 miles, whatever was bothering me, I've worked it out. You know, I've thought about it. I do a lot of plotting that way for my books and story ideas. And whenever something's just, you know, really bugging me, irritating me, I just kind of walk. And I can use that time to commune and be, you know, if I want to. I know I'm sounding really kind of new agey here, and I'm really not that new age, but there's just some real truth to it.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, and it's, you know, and I lost a dear friend this week, and that was stressful, you know, because I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, how am I going to move on without her? And she's in a much better place, and she is super happy and dancing in the streets, I'm sure, and free of that disease and free of that body that held her down. And I was sort of wallowing, and I had to take that time and walk and be and realize that, you know what, she's not gone. I still have her. I still have memories. Mm-hmm. I still have a relationship that we shared. And you can find peace and comfort, you know, in things like that. And so exercise, laughing, find ways to be in the moment, and just breathe are ways you can de-stress without alcohol.
I agree.
Well, you know, and
I
another
agree.
Thing, too, that I think that we tend to forget about this, but I think those of us that are on the phone as authors and writers who see everything, we probably are a little bit more in tune to this, but taking the moments to just appreciate the beauty around us, you know, stop. I mean, I've actually pulled over on the side of the road on my way to work and taken pictures of a beautiful sunrise, or appreciated a sunset on my way home, or the first bud of a flower blooming. A lot of times the things that are so beautiful, we ignore because our world is so intense and full of so many other things. But if you take that moment to just truly appreciate the beauty that surrounds us every day, it will give you a reason to smile. It will give you a reason to let that moment of sadness pass and appreciate the things that are around us every day.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly.
I agree, too. I'll tell you what, every night, I have a very large window in my bedroom that faces the west, and every night I have the luxury of watching the sunset. I'm back home in Indiana, so the ground is very, very flat where I am. And I'm surrounded by farmland, so there's not much inhibiting me seeing the sunset. And every night I find myself sitting at the end of my bed just watching the sun go down. Now, some nights it doesn't happen, and it's not like I intend to do it. I don't seek it out. It's just I happen to see it, and I sit. And I will sit down and I will watch the oranges fades to pink, fades to purple, and I just enjoy it. And I think that that's become a really important part of my day. Now, I can't say that I'm as happy when the sun comes up because this big window lets every bit of light in. So by the time daylight hits,
are you trying to say you're not a morning person?
I'm not a listen, without coffee, I'm not even a person. So a morning person's not. I have no humanity until the third cup of coffee sets in. But yeah, I do. I enjoy that. And I do think it's very, very important to stop and smell the roses, so to speak. You know, be in the moment. I know that does sound very new agey. I agree with you. But a lot of times we're just rushing and hustling and bustling around and getting kids to soccer practice and whatever and dinner. And you miss out on those things that are free and right there in front of you that will help you relax and just enjoy your life.
Yeah, you should pick something that you enjoy, you know, that makes you relax. And for us, I think writing is one of those tools, except when we have writer's block. It's a little stressful. But, you know, I think choose something that makes you happy to, you know, to do, whether it's exercise, whether it's snorkeling, whether it's walking, whether it's singing. Yeah, that's another thing. You know, y'all are going to think I'm crazy. I was grieving. You know, I was driving home from Tallahassee earlier this week, and I was thinking about my friend, and I was grieving, and all of a sudden, you know, I just started singing in the car. And I'm not a very good singer, so it's a good thing nobody else was in there with me. They wouldn't have been ears would have bled by the time it was over. But, you know, I just started singing, and that was my way of, you know, releasing some stress and releasing some sadness, and it made me happy to, you know, to sing that song. And I'm thinking, you know what, I bet she heard me, and she's probably laughing her butt off right about now. But, it, you know, it's really, it's that kind of thing that, you know, just break into the moment and enjoy it and try to find some joy, like, you know, we've said before, in everything that you do once or twice a day. Smile, try to find some joy in what's going on, and I think you'll be a happier person for it.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. Well, does anybody else have anything they'd like
to
add to that?
Yeah, I do. This is Sue. And the secret to finding that joy is to know what really, really makes you happy. If making you happy is baking things, go beyond baking things for your family. Why not bake cookies and take them to a neighbor who might not be feeling well? Or as a volunteer coordinator, volunteer for something. And volunteer coordinators love people who even just have, you know, a few hours a month that you have time that you'd like to donate to some kind of a thing. Get involved in something. Donate your time to a youth program, or, you know, you have a skill. Everybody has a skill, whether you know it or not or even think it's worth anything. It, somewhere, somebody out there would love to have it. I love to knit and crochet. I have a personal goal before I die of teaching 1,000 people how to knit or crochet. So far, I'm in the 600s. And any opportunity I get, whether it's going and talking to a Girl Scout troop and teaching them how to do it, or I even go to senior centers, which is shocking to me because you think they already remember how or know how, but a lot of them don't. And you know, find something that brings you joy. I like to teach people how to do things. So I'll go out and, like with a scout troop, I'll do something that I can show them how to do. I have a craft class I do with the senior women's group, and we make jewelry. And, you know, just do something. Know what makes you happy and find a way to give it back to somebody.
I agree.
Yeah.
That's really good. And my name is Kelly Abel, and I am a bead addict.
No, Kelly,
Kelly, you need to come to my house.
I sorted mine the other day. I just sorted my beads.
And that is so relaxing. I love sorting beads. It is the best thing in the world.
I love making my bracelets. Mm-hmm. I make bracelets for our books. And
I do too.
For Utopia last year. I did alien bracelets. And then I did for KenCon, I made KenCon bracelets.
And I love doing it. It's the most relaxing. It just takes me away.
I love it.
Yes.
I can just put my fingers in the bead, you know, and just roll
me
a
too.
Couple. It's very relaxing.
Yes. I think Michael's is going out of business because I haven't been in there for a while. Yeah.
Hey, I'll introduce you to a website. Message me. I'll give you one that will just cure that.
Okay.
I mean, it's a great place.
Okay, I will. Okay, I'm sorry, Willow. We got off topic.
Yeah, sorry. We got off topic.
No, that's fine. That's fine.
I found a beataholic. You know, us beataholics have to get together.
Well, I think we probably should go ahead and wrap up the show. It's 4:35 Eastern Standard Time, coming up on the 2 hours. Please, if you're listening, come and check out everybody. You can find us on Facebook. All of us have websites. All of us, I think, have Twitter. Come check us out. Come back next month. We will all be promoting our show next month. We don't know yet which day it will be, but we do know it will be on a Sunday. With new topics for discussion, and if you have a topic that you would like for us to discuss, please feel free to message or email any one of us, and we will do your topic. Right, girls?
Yes,
exactly.
Yes. I'm open. Yes,
gladly.
Amanda Jason, go on my Twitter, Amanda Jason. Go on C.A. Coons. Where else am I? Oh, Carol Conner Coons. That's my personal. You can follow me. I'll follow you back. I'm really easy. Well, no, wait a second. That didn't sound right. Okay. No. I'm going to shut up now.
Now we know why she smiles.
I need some sugar. That's all I need. My blood sugar's low.
That's hilarious.
Stop it,
if
Carol.
Nothing
Stop
else,
it.
I hope anyway. That you, if you didn't learn anything, I hope that you got a good laugh with us today because we sure had a good time. Thank you, all of you, for doing this show. And
thank
from all of
us
here at the World of Ink Network, have a good day, and we will see you next month. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
For
happiness. Bye-bye.
I got a feeling that tonight's gonna be a good night. That tonight's gonna be a good night. That tonight's gonna be a good night.